All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Finance and Governance Committee. Today is August the 9th. My name is Zach Edan. I'm the chair of the committee. My colleagues, the council members, are Kathy Hogarty and then Cynthia Delatrinus Johnson. Today we have two items. The first one is continuing the discussion of the restoration of the service levels. We have Vicky Carlson, the finance director, that will be speaking on that. And it's a discussion only item.
Correct. So thank you, Vicky Carlson, finance director. So in your packet is a memo that walks through, basically it's an update to the memo you had at the last time. With some updated information. And if it's okay with you, what I'd like to do is just kind of really talk about the key points from the memo rather than walking through the memo itself. And what a couple things that I want to point out is, first of all, we are still waiting for final guidance on how ARPA funds can be used. They'd initially said that we would receive the final guidance the middle of July. It's still not out there. I actually looked today and it still says interim final rule. And the last update was, I think, June 27th. So we're still waiting for the final guidance. But just as a reminder, there's four categories that ARPA funds can be used on. So the first category is responding to the COVID emergency and addressing the economic effects of the COVID. And so that's providing aid to households through rental assistance, utility assistance, providing assistance to small businesses, nonprofits, and some of tourism and hospitality industry. Another area that you can spend ARPA funds on is due to lost revenue where services needed to be reduced because of lost revenue. So putting those services back in place can be used for ARPA funds. And specifically call out making investments in water, sewer, and broadband infrastructure. If you want to do other infrastructure projects, there needs to be some sort of a nexus to COVID. And that's some of the updated guidance that's in this memo is we had originally come forward proposing some projects that ARPA funds could be used for. And with the updated guidance we have, there needs to be some sort of a link back to COVID. So either a service or a program that was reduced or funds to restore those programs, frozen positions, capital projects that directly benefit neighborhoods and communities that were significantly impacted by the effects of COVID. So if you want to do park programs, because there's an understanding that when the pandemic hit, people were out in the community, they were outside, they were utilizing parks. And what this means is some of the projects that we had initially proposed, we have now understand don't qualify for COVID. So we had initially thought, you know, maybe we could put some funds towards the teen and senior center. It was not anything that was reduced. And so something like that would not qualify for COVID as an example. So as you look through the memo, you'll see a couple of projects that we specifically call out and say, these don't qualify. Again, there needs to be that nexus back to the impacts of COVID. We are receiving $5.7 million. We received half of it just a few weeks ago. We'll receive the other half next year, so that's good news. We need to spend or commit all of the funds by the end of 2024. So we definitely have time to be thoughtful about how we want to spend these funds. We don't have to spend them all in 2021. We can spend them throughout between now and the end of 2024, which gives us time to understand the impacts of COVID on our ongoing revenue streams as we see these come back, where we can make the best use of ARPA funds and then match that up against, you know, our revenues returning to pre-COVID levels. What we've given you is we have given you a plan to spend all of the money. It's just an option. So we put this together for discussion purposes. The majority of the proposals are community facing, either directly by road calming project or sorry, traffic calming projects, direct rental and utility assistance to the communities, or restoring programs that the communities utilize. So park maintenance, street maintenance, putting back the before and after school program, part of the rec program that was put back in place through with the Camp Tukwili. So most of these definitely have benefits to the community. ARPA funds, the $5.7 million, is not going to address all of our needs. So I just want to point out that we do still have other frozen positions throughout the city, particularly in the police department. We really haven't done anything with ARPA funds for police through this particular plan. And we also have departments that budgets are very, very tight. So there's been nothing to relieve the pressure from departments through this plan. The plan we put together does spend all $5.7 million through the end of 2024. But again, it's just a proposal for it. And what I'd like to do is have a conversation with this committee and get some thoughts on what pieces of this plan you like, ideas for programs you'd like to see added to the list. One of the things we can definitely do is some of the labor that we've got penciled in for the out years, the next biennial budget, can be easily swapped to other programs. But again, this was just to get the conversation started and show a path forward to spend the $5.7 million. And with that, I think I'd like to just open it up for discussion and questions.
Thank you, Vicki Carlson. Appreciate that. All right, so I guess clarifications or questions for Vicki. Kathy, you want to go first?
Sure. I have a bunch, not a bunch of questions. I have several questions. The score, tell me, did I miss something? Scores in there, were they in there before?
They were not in there before. So score, we're an owner city with score, along with four other cities. Score jail is not allowed to receive ARPA funding. They were significantly impacted by the pandemic, just like the rest of us were, by reduction in inmates coming through the system. So they've had a significant reduction in revenue. Because they are not able to directly receive ARPA funds, there may be an ask to the owner cities to help provide them some funding to make sure that they stay financially sustainable for the long term. They are looking in their own books, their own fund balance, to see what they can do on their own with before they come to the owner cities. But I wanted to put that in there because there may be an ask for up to, Tukwila's share would be up to $150,000 based on what we know today. It's not set in stone, but I do want to put that in the plan because that ask could be coming.
Which brings me to a comment, and that is that I would be open to setting aside that money and not spending it, but we got to see what their ask is and what they're thinking about doing. So it's like, okay, you've got 150 here. We could say, okay, we'll just set that aside so that we have something if we want to do that, right? So everything is spent here except $200,000. And I think that's a little bit of a tight margin because it would be good to have more than that allocated for things that come up, things that might come up, at least for now. Let's see. I didn't see anything else that I would question. And some, the ones that are sooner, such as upgrading the council chamber, the after school program, those ones are pretty much, we know it's a known thing and we know what it is. And the parks and rec staff, street staff, the staffing, I think it's traffic calming, maybe a little bit more flexible on that. And I don't know what more flexible looks like, but that's what I'm thinking. There's some that are pretty concrete, so to speak. Business assistance, pretty, we know what that is. So anyway, those are my comments for now. Flexibility, questions about score, but not crossing that one off, but saying we want to see what they want, their proposal, and having more flexibility than just $2,000 left over, however that looks.
And if I could just make one comment that I apologize, I meant to make this earlier, is we do this through the budget process or the budget amendment process. And so we would be looking for formal direction for any funds to be spent in 2021, because that would need to be via a budget amendment. Same with 2022. We can adjust the budget this year for 2022. We can adjust the budget for next year for 2022. Anything that we have proposed to spend in 2023 and 2024, again, it's just a suggestion at this point. We would be taking formal action on that through the next biennial budget process, which we kick off early next year. So there's plenty of opportunity to have flexibility for this, because you would not be committing the full 5.7 now. And it definitely provides you with the flexibility if other projects come up that become a higher priority. I think really the key is to make sure, as Councilmember Ho already mentioned last time, is we don't want to spend the money twice. We want to make sure that we're bringing forward a solid financial plan and a balanced budget through the next biennial budget process. And this gives us the opportunity to do that.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Cynthia.
So I agree with a lot of what Kathy was saying. I think it would be good to hear from SCORE about, you know, the funds, and I'm okay with putting money aside for that, but it would be good to hear directly from them about just the need that they have and why we would provide that funding before just agreeing to it.
And we could definitely make that happen.
And overall, I mean, just after reviewing this, because I know these are more high level discussions, we're not really getting down to decision making at this point. But what I thought was lacking from the proposal was really a focus on equity and how are we looking at this, the recovery funds, through an equity lens, really prioritizing those in our community that were hit hardest. One of the things that really, you know, hold on, my kids are getting loud. One second. One of the things that really stood out to us during COVID, especially in our community, was that it really laid bare the disparities that exist within our community, particularly for people of color, people of low incomes. And we know that a lot, you know, that is Tukwila. And I think it's really important for us as we make a plan for these funds to really make that front and center of our plan, is saying that we are looking through these issues with an equity lens. These are the things that we're prioritizing based on that. And I thought that was really lacking in the memo. Some other things, so I want to talk about the things that I really did like about the things that I saw in here. I really liked, you know, really focusing on broadband infrastructure. We got a good presentation from it was Joel, right? About the broadband infrastructure plan and why it's important. Of course, we know that utility assistance, rental assistance, business assistance, support for after school programming, because that addresses a lot of the childcare needs that parents have in order to return to work. All of those things are good. I thought one thing that was missing was, you know, just putting $500,000 in that first year without really looking at what kind of needs might happen in the following two years, and only leaving $200,000 at the end was, I don't think that, I just don't know. I think that we might need to do a little more research around what the impacts might be. And I don't know if there are people out there who've already been predicting what that might look like in the future, but I think it might be smart for us to hold aside more funds possibly in that area, given that a majority of our residents are renters. Sorry, I have some notes. Another thing that I saw was missing. I know that we, at least right now, our understanding is we cannot use the funds for the teen center. But I thought what was missing was, what are we doing for teens in our community? I feel like they're a special group of people. They're young adults who are, you know, transitioning, entering the workforce, you know, leaving their household. But there really wasn't any funding set aside to really work with teens in how they're recovering. I know I've heard from the school, from various different community partners, that teens have really been suffering a lot just in terms of mental health and other issues. But I think it might be a good opportunity for us to really look at, what are the ways that we could support the teens in our community if we can't invest in long-term infrastructure? You know, I think it's really important for us to look at what kind of short-term programming we could do. Nate Robinson is our one teen specialist. Maybe we can look at increasing another teen specialist. I apologize for the noise in the background. And then one last thing was, in just thinking about the health disparities in our community, I didn't really see anything in there about supporting just better health outcomes for our community and what that might mean. And then the last thing I'll say is, it might be an opportunity for us to look at funding the Community Connectors program to really get people on the ground who could help us understand what the impacts are in our community. And that's all for now. I'll pass it to Zach.
Thank you, Cynthia. Thank you for what you do, having kids and serving the community at the same time. It's not amazing. So thank you. So Vicky, I just wanted to ask, I think most of the questions and comments that my colleagues have already, I share those, so I don't want to repeat that, but just want to ask some clarification questions. The question around the score, one thing I did not hear was that, is it allowed, you know, this fund can be used from ARPA funds to pay the $150,000. Have you looked into that? And is that okay?
Yes, okay. That definitely is qualified.
The other thing, also upgrading the council chambers, does that also qualify?
It does. They put in the interim final rule is that improvements to technology definitely qualify. And I believe Joel is going to report on that next. And so you'll hear what that's been done. And we're also going to be coming back to you possibly with more information on the broadband. They definitely pulled out technology and said that technology, improvements to technology is allowable.
Okay. Where is the broadband in this proposal?
So it's not in this particular proposal. We're still gathering information on how best to roll something like that out, not only with the one-time build-out costs, but then the ongoing costs. And if there's interest in pulling that project forward, what the recommendation would be is, instead of funding staffing in the out years, to take that money and swap it to pay for the broadband. So again, there's a lot of flexibility. This was just a plan to show how to spend the money with the money in the out year, the over $2 million can be redirected to broadband or other projects that become a higher priority now.
Okay. The traffic plan, the traffic calming, looks like starting this year throughout 2024. Are there specific projects? I think there are some that are highlighted in the memo. Is that capture those specific projects that are highlighted in the memo, or are there more to it?
Yeah, so it captures some of them. You may recall that we used to have in our budget $400,000 a year set aside for traffic calming, and that was something we did have to eliminate because of the impact of COVID. And so this would restore that the traffic calming in residential neighborhoods. Some of the projects have been identified, others would be identified in the out years.
Okay. I would also look into, as mentioned, programs that related to teens, what sort of projects that we have that would probably potentially might qualify, CIP projects. I think one of the things that I'm still would like to see, and maybe, the staff that's leading this effort when it comes to the business assistance and the rental assistance, I would like them to come here and maybe kind of give us a highlight on what that looks like, so we can ask a few questions. Maybe next time around when you have enough information or you hear more direction, it'd be good to talk to them directly. I personally think that we need to look at other ways to support SCORE, but not through the ARPA funds. I've detailed questions when it comes to economic development plan and so the $500,000 that's set aside for utility and rental, one thing that I was kind of thinking was, is that just, half and half, or what does that look like? And, and then maybe we need to figure out a way to allocate some in 2022, because, we're not out the woods. When it comes to COVID, so we got to figure out. The other thing that really stood out for me was, and I'm 100% in line with, is that when we spend traffic calming 1.6, total of 1.6, I would like to understand more on, what's not unshown here, but what is the plan? And because essentially I'm working on ARPA funds, COVID related, and I understand now this is what one of the reasons is, if it was impacted when during the budget, and that's the line item we zeroed out. Especially if you look at the first two line items, we're spending about 600, 500 staff. And then you come down to the, second last 900,000 of a staff. So how are we getting to, businesses and the community? So that's some of the things I'm kind of thinking out loud as I review this. So maybe we can have a robust discussion next time around. Since you have an idea on what some of us are, all of us on the committee are thinking, hopefully we can have that discussion next time around. I don't have any other comments on that. If there are no questions or comments, we can move on to the, go ahead, Cynthia.
If Rachel wanted to talk, Rachel could talk first.
Well, I'm happy to give you more information on the human services and utilities if you would like that information. Stacey Hansen is not with us tonight, but she and I have been, we're tied at the hip on this, and so I'm happy to provide some more context if that's what you would like, because I know that's of interest to all of you as well as the full council. So, or happy to wait until the next discussion.
Go ahead, Rachel. I'm sorry, I didn't realize you wanted to say something, Mike.
That's okay. So that those funds, I just want to be clear, that's a bucket of money that would roll into 2022. So we still have some of the funds available that you all set aside last year of that $250,000, right? And so we are spending that out. One of the things that we're finding is that, first of all, we have great partners with the county and with some other agencies who with the EPRAP funds, and our residents are definitely getting access to those funds. So that's something that you all should feel really great about, is that EPRAP is in our community. EPRAP is helping our families, right? One of the things that we are running into, though, is that we have a cap of $2,400 that we've been working on. And as you remember, we had that discussion. And Stacy and I, Hodo and Delia, our extra labor person, are all in agreement that if you were to look at allocating additional funds, and specifically the ARPA funds, our recommendation is that we up the cap. Because what we're running into is our families who have, you know, significant needs, right? $5,000-$8,000 worth of back rent. And what we always try to do, and we've talked about this before, right, is we knit together as many funding sources as we can for our families. We've found a gap a few times, right? So our recommendation is that we go ahead, you allocate those additional dollars, which would roll into 2022. We couldn't spend that money in 2021, honestly, even if we tried, right? But that we go ahead and up the cap so that we can help those families. Because our goal is always housing stability, right? Somebody has $8,000 and we have a $2,400 cap and we can't figure out how to make that difference, we can't help them, right? But if the cap was $5,000, right, and we could help them knit together that additional three, right, that's really where we think that we should go. And so that is the proposal from Human Services. The money would go to either rental assistance or utility assistance, sort of depending on how that came through. We did, really the request that came through, we did look at all of the utilities across all of the utility providers, and arrearage is in Tukwila, and it is significant. But as the finance director mentioned, everything has to have a COVID nexus to it. So, you know, we were throwing around the idea, well, what if we could just wipe out all of the arrearages in Seattle City Light's utility discount program, right? That's their low income program. We can't do that because we can't prove that all of those are COVID related, right? So that's the recommendation moving forward. I wanted to make sure you knew that that money would move into 2022. We couldn't give all that money out right now as it is. So I'm happy to answer any Human Services related questions. Again, Stacey and I have been working really close on this.
Thank you so much for that. I think it'd be good. Great suggestion and recommendation. I look forward to looking at it. Just have a follow-up question. How many times can you help an individual? Just one time cap? If you can help, what does that look like?
Sorry, wrong button. So we do have a lifetime cap. So we will help a family for multiple times. It's just when they get to that lifetime cap, right? So pre-COVID, we had a much lower cap, but we've been known to help families two or three times, let's say with a utility bill or something like that. It's just the key issue is that dollar cap that we get to.
Sounds good. Okay. Any other questions for Rachel? Well, go ahead.
I still would love to hear from just the Human Services staff, anybody who's available, just in terms of like, I'm curious how people are accessing the funds, because I know there are also like barriers for people in being able to even just access somebody who could help them get the assistance they need. And whether that's something that we should look into investing, like I really felt things like the community connectors, actually having people on the ground could be an opportunity for that. But then I don't know but I'm interested in hearing from those staff who work directly with folks who could say, you know, these are the kinds of things, resources, tools we need in order to get this assistance out. Because it's great that we have these funds, but it's only as good as we, you know, make ourselves available to the people that need it. So that's something I'm interested in. The last thing I want to say is, I spoke about equity at the beginning, and I'll just say, you know, Zach pointed out the traffic calming. We have, based on this memo, I'm just looking at the last column, the 1.6 for traffic calming in comparison to all the other areas that we're proposing to use funding for. And how, for me, it's like, how does traffic calming address the disparities and the recovery in the most equitable way? And I don't think that we can really say that traffic calming is, you know, going to really help our community recover in the best way. I think traffic calming is really important, and maybe this is something that we could use the streamlined sales tax dollars better for. I'm really trying to, for me, what's important in using these recovery funds is really thinking equitably about recovery. Not that I don't think some of these other things on here are important, but really it's just, you know, these funds are meant for certain purposes. And that's all I'll say. But I appreciate all the work that went into putting this together, and happy to have this discussion with you all.
I appreciate the conversation and the feedback, and you've given us some great direction for the next iteration. So thank you for that.
Thank you. I think we might have the miscellaneous item. Let's go back and look at that. Status of meeting room technology upgrade, Joel Bush.
Yeah, thank you.
Technology officer. Go ahead, sir.
Hello, thank you. So for the update to the council chambers, so we provided three proposals to you a few months ago now. We've been working with our vendor on that, and there's still some more things to work through. For that solution, they have their own meeting software, not Teams or Zoom. We were the first use case that came to them and said, hey, we can't use your special meeting software. We can't have any barriers to access the meetings. So I need you to ensure for us that this solution will work seamlessly with Teams or Zoom. So that's where we're at right now. And knowing that we were going to have delay in that upgrade, we decided to move forward with some small adjustments to ensure that we can do a hybrid meeting. So we can do that right now, but it's not ideal. So we're going to continue working on a proposal with our vendor to make sure it's the right thing, and we won't have any barriers to access the meeting, like a new type of meeting software when everyone is used to Zoom and Teams. Is that fair enough? Is enough information there?
Yeah, no, thank you so much. So thank you for the update. Go ahead, Kathy.
Joel has some questions about that. I've got my old memo, it's not old, the previous memo on this, and the things that we were going to use, and I just want some more details. So the software that they have to use in order to be able to access the technology, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. This whole stack of stuff that explains the technology in our last presentation. So they're saying, whoever the vendor is saying, in order to be able to use that technology, you have to use software other than Teams or Zoom. Is that true?
Yes. So that's what we're working through now, where we need that technology to work seamlessly with Zoom.
Okay. And that's not technology that, say, my husband could download on his computer so he can watch the meeting.
It would be everyone that joins a city council meeting will have to figure out a new meeting software to use.
Okay. So they would have to figure out a new meeting software.
Mm-hmm.
Is it like something that's widespread or their own?
No, it is not. We are first in Washington, in the Northwest, the only that I know of is the Nike board of directors use BEV software. So it's not widespread. So it raised some concerns for me. So I want to make sure we do our due diligence to where we're not introducing barriers to access.
Right. So it's proprietary software.
Yes.
They are, and it doesn't look to you like it's going to become widespread like Teams or Zoom or anything in the future.
The meeting, their meeting software, no.
Yeah, and if it's proprietary, it's probably not going
to
be.
Yeah, so that's why to me it's very important that it works seamlessly with the, you know, the standards.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. So, and then you said you were going to do some small upgrades. So I'm really interested in us being ready to get into the chambers as soon as we can, as soon as this Delta variant settles down and everything. So what are you talking about for small changes between you?
The small changes are we can have a hybrid meeting to where the cameras that are currently in the council chambers will be the web camera for the TIS staff that's in the back. So essentially what we can say is all council members share your cameras. If the council members are in around the DS, we can spotlight that camera to where, you know, the DS is front and center, and then we'll see other council members that are sharing their cameras.
So we will have the cameras. You will be putting the cameras in.
Yes.
Okay. So what won't you be putting in? Just the software?
Just that. You won't have the fancy tablets yet. No fancy tablets.
Okay.
Yeah. And then we still have the kind of noise pollution from the fans in the back, you know. That's still going to be there, and TIS staff getting stressed out trying to, you know, do the cameras and all the gizmos back there.
Well, that sounds like we could get back in, and it won't be perfect. And that often, you know, this stuff evolves, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it won't be perfect, but you could get us back into the chambers. How much of the money you're going to spend of the
proposal? $6,000 to have Dimensional come out and do a little bit of rerouting wires and testing everything. Some hiccups, it's done. It was about $6,000.
Okay. So I'm in support of keeping that funds, the $200 in there for the complete build out, if you want to call it that. And then, but getting there now in pieces instead of all at once.
Yeah. So we can have a meeting next. Well, I'd like to do some more testing, but it should be ready to go.
It went by when?
We have to do some testing. I would like to have a couple larger meetings there before we say it's good to go, just to work out any kinks if there are any. Like I need to test with someone at each mic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm going to work through how to best do that testing.
So if you want to give an 8-week window, like September, October, something like that.
I would say by the end of this month.
Oh. Wonderful.
It's just a matter of testing to make sure, you know, testing with enough people involved that we work out any little kinks.
Wonderful. Okay, thanks. So that gives me a lot of information, and I'm looking forward to the day we can meet in person.
Okay. And then the other, I got some exciting news. So we talked about broadband earlier and my ideas on what a smart city is. And it starts with universal access to high quality internet. So there's a grant opportunity that came out a few weeks ago from the State of Washington Public Works Board. So it's a $2 million grant with a 50% match. So our contribution would be $1 million for a total of $3 million. And I've been working and reaching out to vendors talking about private Wi-Fi or private municipal run LTE networks. And I got a rough order magnitude quote that came in at about $2.8 million for the CapEx cost to get the infrastructure in place for a smart city. But it's just not the $2.8 million. There are also going to be some recurring costs associated with this. Example would be we're going to need a bigger internet connection to support, you know, community broadband. So what that would cost per year is about $89,000 for an internet connection that's large enough to to support all the students in the city of Tukwila would be $89,000. Then there's also maintenance of this equipment, and that's $130,000 per year. And that is so steep because TIS is not going to scale cell phone towers and repair them. We'd have to contract that out. So I'm pretty excited about this grant. I wanted to bring it up here because it's the grant application is due October 1st, and we got to get it ready in time to notify Lumen and Xfinity because they have an opportunity to object to our grant application. But I do need to start, if it's a good idea, I start working on the letter support. The first one would be the school district, and it would be support, hey, potentially property, potentially, hey, can you help pay for, because we're primarily talking, it starts with students for me. We're talking about Tukwila students. Can you help pay for some of the internet connection? Maybe all of it. And then I want to reach out to INET to get a letter of support. The good news is that our former CIO, Joseph, is responsible for INET. That's the King County Fiber Consortium. So we put up, what I share with our vendors is we put a layer in GIS that had our, it's kind of sad, but 45% of our Tukwila students were sent home with mobile hotspots, or the school district paid for Comcast Internet Essentials. So it's 45% of the students. We put that on a map. Look where our city-owned fiber is, where INET fiber is, and like, hey, where's the best place to get full coverage in the city of Tukwila? So we have that map. Now it's getting a letter of support from INET. Hey, are there going to be any obstacles to using this resource to provide an LTE network that covers all of the city of Tukwila? So I need a letter of support for him, and then council support of the grant application. So that's going to get in front of TIC on 8/23.
Well, that sounds like exciting. So thank you. Go ahead, Kathy. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I have questions. The first one, let's go back to the beginning of this conversation where you said that there's a $2 million grant with a $1 million match. So does that mean Tukwila would have to come up with $1 million?
Yes, $1 million.
Okay. So, and we already have like a bridge and a teen center. So that's one of the challenges right there. But the first thing I thought of, you mentioned, and that is that the school district's paying already for these hotspots. So they've already invested. They wouldn't need those anymore. I really think that the school district could partner with us on this particular project. And that might be where we get to that $1 million. Because to me, that's right there. It's like, okay, we got to get $1 million. And we've already, you know, we don't want to spend money twice. Again, we've got a teen center. We got a bridge. So, or not a bridge. I shouldn't say that's not what it is. It could be a bridge. It's an EIS study. I disclaimer and take back everything I said about the word bridge. Forget the word bridge. It is an EIS study. Sorry, I had to do that. So anyway, there you go.
Yeah, thank you. Not only that $1 billion, but I think there is a cost associated with the maintenance. So, I think you threw the numbers out, but it'd be good to get a one lump sum of that.
Yeah, it's $220,000 for maintenance and the internet connection that's dedicated to the community broadcast.
Okay, thank you. Cynthia, do you have comments, questions on, like, first, just, I think the update on the technology upgrade and then the grant that Joel's working on.
I want to make sure it's still working really closely with Brittany Robinson from Public Works. She's been very, very helpful on the grant.
Great. Go ahead, Cynthia.
No, I want to thank Joel for his work. I think it's exciting. I didn't expect that when Kathy was like, when is it going to be ready? Joel's like, the end of the month. But, you know, we know that there needs to be testing, but I think it's exciting how quickly this is moving, and I'm also excited to, you know, try these new technologies and hybrid meetings and just see what we can do. And then the next thing, I'm really supportive of the grant opportunity. I think that's great if we could, you know, utilize a grant to become a smart city, and the cost that you identified in terms of reoccurring costs, it's not as much as I would have thought it would be to get our whole city connected, which I think is really important. So I'm supportive of that and looking forward to continued discussions around it.
Thank you. One thing I was kind of thinking, I didn't know, I think you mentioned something I did not know, which is the county piece, but, you know, Fran that works, you know, now, the ENED, you called it. I think it'd be great to get some sort of a presentation with the whole council, maybe you or you know, something that talks about what the county is doing and, you know, and how we, how we interject with the work that the county is doing, and if we picked up this piece, this is what, you know, would look like. It'd be great to get some sort of figure out a presentation. I don't know, like 10 very small, short, concise presentation in either regular meeting or Cal.
Yeah, I can do that.
Yeah. Great. I just wanted to ask you a clarification. One of the things that I have noticed when we moved into Teams is, like, especially people that don't have Teams, it's hard for them to get on. So I don't know, Zoom seemed like a lot more easier for folks. So whatever we're doing, I want to make sure that, you know, that's kind of, you know, what you're working on. I know you said seamless. So if someone wants to listen or communicate with us, it is really tough for some people. I've noticed that for Microsoft Teams. Figuring out what that looks like, and I know you talked about software and you know, the consultant that you're working on. So make sure that there is really something that's compatible with Zoom, especially when it comes to, I have no problem, you know, as long as something is in my machine, or if I speak for myself, I think, you know, I could figure it out, but it was really hard for our residents that were trying to log in for Teams. I don't know if you have comments or you just working.
Yes, continue. I think now that Microsoft and Teams is pretty much at parity with Zoom, when it, and there are some things are even better with Teams. Their translation services and closed captioning, it's built in, and the AI is amazing. Where with Zoom, you have to pay for someone to do closed captioning for you. So to me, I think it's on par.
Okay.
It was a different use case, because initially Teams was for internal meetings, you know, it was an enterprise solution, but they pivoted in the last year and a half and made quite a few changes. And then there's more in terms of security by policy. Like, you can set a policy for the whole organization within Teams, saying like, only certain people can be presenters. You know, there's a lot from a security standpoint. I'm much more comfortable with Teams as opposed to Zoom.
And the reason is just for security reasons?
Security is one where you can manage your meetings through policy. Like, you can set a policy for all city meetings. You can set a policy for just council meetings, to where you never have to mess around with it. You set it one time, and that's how it's configured.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah, as long as someone doesn't, I mean, folks will let us know if they have some issues, and we got to figure out what the issue is. But I recall when we moved to virtual that there were some hiccups there. And maybe
yeah.
Just...
yeah, there were. I manned the phone. There were. Yeah. Yeah. I understand.
All right. Thank you. Are there any comments, questions, my fellow council members? Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, go ahead.
I did want to say I'm totally supportive. Just there's a few things that need to be looked at, and one is the match of the grant. And other than that, that's the only barrier that I really see. And Teams is improving all the time, which is really good. And that's really interesting to know that they used to be inward facing, the Teams, and then because that's how you can call each other. And now they're really working on their public facing software. So yeah, we'll see where this goes, right?
Yep. Right on. Well, thank you, everyone. We are adjourned. See you guys at 7:00. Thank you.